This is Driven by Data, the podcast.
Welcome back to another season of Driven by Data, the podcast. Powered by Orbition Group and hosted by me, Kyle Winterbottom. We are delighted to bring you season four of Driven by Data, the podcast, and our aim remains exactly the same: to bring you some of the most respected and recognized thought leadership figures from the world of data analytics to share their knowledge, ideas, use cases, and insights across how they've tackled some of the industry's most trending topics and challenges. All that's left to say is sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Driven by Data, the podcast, season four. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Michelle Gansler, who is the Chief Data Analytics and AI Officer for McDonald's. Michelle, thank you for joining us.
Hi.
It's a mouthful of a title. I managed to get it out.
I love it.
So where we always start, Michelle, is by asking our guests to give themselves a brief introduction into their background and, I guess, journey to date up until this point in time, if you'd be so kind.
Sure. I always like talking about my background because it's kind of a funny story and not a traditional one. I think I, you know, maybe have mentioned this in a couple of different places before, but I actually start my career in marketing. So many years ago, like 30 years ago, I had no idea when I was just a fledgling teenager going into college, I had no idea what I wanted to do in life. So I literally took the University of Texas, which is where I went to undergrad, the coursebook, which is big, and went through every single page and circled things that sounded interesting to me. And almost everything that sounded interesting to me was in marketing and sociology. And so I thought, well, marketing probably pays more. So I got a marketing degree. And after a few years of doing marketing in the healthcare industry, I wasn't loving what I was doing. So I went back to grad school to become a global brand manager. So still in marketing. But while I was in between my first 2 years, a woman convinced me to take an insights and analytics internship. And I did that. And I thought, well, that would be great for my marketing career. But I loved it so much that I never left. And so thus began my career in insights. And it started off being in traditional consumer insights. And then it went to like insights and innovation, then insights and analytics, and then more analytics, and then deeper into data. And I've slowly just been migrating my way till now I'm leading the data analytics and AI teams at McDonald's. And I think the common theme there is that I've always been someone who just says yes to new opportunity and always been curious about the evolving industry. So I'd say I accidentally found my way into this career.
Mm, yeah. It's interesting the amount of people I've interviewed on this podcast who have said something similar. You know, it wasn't an intentional journey. And, you know, we've had people that have done, you know, geography degrees and all kinds of different, what you would anticipate to be fairly random, but obviously quite data heavy or intense subjects in their own right. So I guess it kind of makes sense. Obviously you've worked for some major global brands before McDonald's as well, right? So that's probably teed you up quite nicely for the kind of position that you hold today, which is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess this is normally the part of the podcast where I say, tell us a little bit about insert company name, right? And I kind of feel a little bit silly asking you that because everybody on planet Earth knows McDonald's and the, you know, the golden arches and who you are and what you do. But I guess it'd probably be good to get a little bit of detail from you around context or stats, maybe some things that people don't know about the business that you might be able to kind of share and, you know, I guess set the scene on the size and the scale of the operation.
Sure. So this actually just happened recently. So what people do know, of course, is that we're, you know, a fast food company that sells a lot of burgers and fries. But here, I'll tell you three fun facts that probably most people listening to this don't know. Number one, globally, we actually sell more chicken than we do burgers in the world. And if you think about like the context, right, in Asia, there tend to be less of a beef market. So I think that's something that most people don't know. The other fun fact is, I was listening recently to the CEO of Mattel talking, and he was mentioning how the toy industry is a $90 billion industry. And I just thought to myself, like, that's crazy that McDonald's, the company, is bigger than the entire toy industry, because we're at over 115 billion, something around there. So that second fun fact, we're bigger than the entire toy industry. The third fun fact, we're one of the largest real estate owners in the world, because we own all the real estate for which our restaurants sit on. So we own the box, and then the franchisees own what's inside the box. So the employees and the equipment, et cetera.
That is very interesting. How many restaurants does that kind of take you to then globally?
Right now, we have roughly 44,000 restaurants around the world, with an aspiration of getting to 50,000 over the next 2 to 3 years.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a sizable real estate asset for sure. So cool. Obviously, the chief data analytics and AI officer, what's the purpose of your role? I guess what's, you know, what you're responsible for, what you've been tasked with achieving, what are you there to deliver?
Yeah. I mean, at its simplest, our like kind of overarching North Star is turn our one of a kind data into a winning advantage. And we say that, and one of a kind, we say that because of the fact that we have, you know, one of the largest real estate, one of the largest supply chains, one of the largest employers. Just think about all those things, like all of that creates data, right? People analytics, finance analytics, supply chain analytics. So the goal of my team is, historically, that's been diffused within markets and functions. And because of that, we're sub-optimizing our ability to connect data dots, our ability to create synergies, our ability to create platforms, products, and services once for the benefit of all. So we're doing a lot of like recreating the wheel because we're decentralized. So the goal of my team is to figure out how can we optimize both efficiency and effectiveness by creating a centralized team on behalf of the business.
Yeah, interesting. And I guess what does the, if you to take your data analytics organization and capability, I guess, you know, just to give the listener a bit of insight into maybe the size and scale of, you know, your operation that deals with such a Goliath brand and scale of a larger business, what does that look like?
Well, it's hard to say that because of the fact it's decentralized. But if we don't talk about people and just talk about where work is done, we have something like 1,000 people touching data and analytics as a part of their job.
Yeah.
And of that, that's inclusive of internal people and contractors. And our goal is to figure out what is the right which we're still like we're flying the plane as we build it, but where, you know, the work to be done is to figure out what is the right operating model, what's the work to be done, where should the work sit, how do we work optimally together between functions, markets, etc.
Yeah, because I guess obviously being so geographically dispersed with obviously your real estate asset and obviously then the franchises out in, you know, all corners of the globe, I imagine that has its challenges, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're in something like 110 countries with 3 different operating models. So it seems like it shouldn't be that complicated. But when, you know, I always say it's easier to build a house from nothing than to try to renovate a home that's already built, right? Yeah. That's often more expensive to renovate a home than it is if you just built it from scratch. And that's kind of what we're doing. We're renovating our home that's already built.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, very interesting. I guess in terms of data analytics, then I think, you know, there's a lot of industries where these types of podcasts probably have more guests from, you know, I don't know, banking or finance, you know, the financial services in institutions, where how they use data is probably spoken about maybe more frequently than how data might be used in something like the fast food industry, as an example. So I'd love just to give for you to give us an insight into kind of, you know, types of things that data analytics can do for the fast food industry more generally, but then I guess specifically, you know, the kind of key type of use cases that you tend to use it for at somewhere like McDonald's.
Yeah, I mean, we could spend like 4 hours talking about that, because data plays a role in every company. Data plays a role in all aspects, but just to make it tangible, to give an example is, you know, we have, for example, we have this large loyalty program where people opt into the app, and if they sign up to be a known first party customer, then we give them extra benefits and extra value, right? But the benefit of having that data, we can do so many things with that. Give you, Kyle, like, I know that you grab a coffee on your way into work, right? So I can give you personalized communication or offer specifically around coffee or breakfast, knowing that that's what your preference is, versus just sending you blanket generic communications. Like, that's one example of how we can make data better for consumers' lives. But we could also make it better for owner-operators, because imagine if we could do a better job of forecasting how their business is going to be, where they're going to have peaks and troughs so that they can plan labor better. So that's an example of how we can use data to both help consumers, but also help our franchisees and customers, I mean, and the company as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess when you start to think about the size and scale of what you do, the possibilities almost seem endless. How do you manage, you know, lead that in terms of the prioritization piece around, you know, what is possible versus what's not possible? And, you know, we need to do these things at these times, or, you know, these might provide us with the greatest impact on our customers and our operators and so on and so forth.
Yeah. You know, I actually think this is probably the easiest part of the job, because we're an enabler to the whole company. So as long as we are clear on what the company priorities are, then we evolve our priorities around what the company priorities are. So, I mean, it for sure is a dynamic prioritization process, because the company's priorities change over time, but we've got governing mechanisms within the company to do that. So there's the what can we do, but then there's the what should we do. Right. So the company priority sets what should we do. And then we, our job is to understand how can we unlock that.
Hmm. Yeah. Makes sense. I know when we spoke offline, Michelle, one of the things that I guess intrigued me was you talked about, you know, McDonald's commitment to kind of innovation and change and constantly be looking at, you know, what's next and how do we improve, which I guess intrigued me, because obviously as probably the biggest, most recognized brand on the planet, you almost think of McDonald's as a business that, well, it'll be successful whatever it does, right? So why should it care so much about evolving and changing and trying to innovate how it operates? I'd love to, yeah, for you to kind of give us an insight into, I guess, you know, why you feel that the business has this commitment to all of those types of things.
Well, I think the first part is we will be successful no matter what is absolutely untrue, right? The death knell for any company is being lackadaisical or feeling like they can't be returned. Look at Kmart. You know, Kmart was the Walmart 30 years ago. Now it almost doesn't exist. And I could name all the examples, Kodak, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the reason why we continue to thrive is because we're always looking to optimize and innovate. I mean, I think when we had talked that one time, right, I told you that drive-thrus as a concept existed, but only very sporadically. But it was only when McDonald's introduced drive-thrus that it became like a popularized thing. And now, you know, we have drive-thrus in something like 70% of all of our restaurants around the world. And it's completely innovated how people interact with restaurants. And then same with like when we started Uber Eats. We did that well before the pandemic. And I remember even as a customer being like, that's crazy that we can have McDonald's delivered now. But it's now grown to be 15% of our business, something like that, you know, with a goal of continuing to grow that. So I say that to say we continue to succeed because we're continuing to look at how do we continue to make sure that we're creating seamless and memorable experiences for consumers? How do we use data and technology to enable that?
Hello, Driven by Data podcast fans. Greg Freeman, CEO of Data Literacy Academy here. We're really aware that all good data strategies include three key pillars: technology, process, and people. But unfortunately, what we see is far too often the people strand is ignored, overlooked, and never delivered. If that's something you're struggling with today, visit www.dl-academy.com, where you can sign up for your free data literacy consultation, and we'll help you shape your people, culture, and learning strategy the right way.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting in itself that you'd already gone down that route before the pandemic, right? Because a lot of organizations kind of had to pivot and adapt very quickly to the change in consumer behavior and what was obviously forced upon us at that moment in time. But I guess that period of our lives has kind of changed the way that consumers think, act, behave, etc., etc. So just talk to us a little bit about that moment in time. Just, I'm more out of curiosity than anything else, but has there been any kind of fundamental shifts from a data analytics perspective in terms of how McDonald's uses data analytics to, you know, drive business in comparison to what life was like before the pandemic, out of interest?
I mean, I think, like you mentioned, we sort of were fortuitous, maybe, or just, you know, great at planning for the future, but we already had a lot of things in place that other people had to scramble to put in place, right? Like, our drive-through was already a part of our business. We already had an app. Like, all the things that COVID created of how do I do things without having to interact. We already had kiosks. How do I do things without interacting with human beings, right? It was kind of like what COVID created. And we already had all those things in place. So for us, if anything, we were just able to benefit from having all of those opportunities already put in place. But I think, you know, if anything, what COVID has taught us is not to rest on our laurels in terms of assuming the past will predict the future. So, you know, one of the things we have done differently is build a foresight team and be a lot more focused on not just the short term, but the medium and the long term. And how do we make sure we're always looking ahead to where the world is going so that we can be as prepared as possible?
That's really interesting. I'd love to know a little bit more about that. I'm conscious that that probably needs to be its own episode in its own right to do it justice. But I guess just give, because I mean, that's a fairly dynamic concept in of itself, that you have a team that focuses just on that. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that listen to this and go, well, that's, you know, that's great, because they're McDonald's and they have the resources and the type of stuff to do that, right? That, you know, all of the stuff that you kind of get beaten with a stick with because you have a very successful business. But just talk us through that kind of force team. Where did that come from?
Company of any size could do this, and probably a lot of big companies do already, but because there's all kinds of third party and free material that futurists and companies put out about future trends and macro forces and all of that. But you're right, because we're a large company, we have the benefit of also having an internal team, but I don't think you need an internal team. The important piece is how do you connect it into your planning processes? So we had a planning process that looks out into the future, you know, 3 to 5 to plus years. And then there's like 2 to 3 and 0 to 2 or 0 to 1. So like most companies, you have like a short, medium, long-term planning process. All we've done is try to centralize and bring together the thinking on where is the future world going and what does that mean to our business, so that every market and every function is working off of the same assumptions. Whereas before, every market and every function was making their own assumptions.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess talk to me a little bit about culture, because it seems like from speaking to you that the kind of culture of McDonald's, as we've discussed, is always thinking about what's next, what can we be doing better, what might, you know, how might our world look in a few years' time? And obviously there you talked about innovations and change around drive-throughs and the app and then Uber Eats, all before that was kind of forced upon most businesses in the pandemic. Is that just the kind of culture of McDonald's more inherently, that, you know, there is this want and desire to continue to be, I guess, cutting edge, you know, for want of a better phrase?
I don't think the want and desire is to be cutting edge. I think the want and desire is to constantly figure out how can we become, like, continue to be relevant to our, we call it the three-legged stool, which is like, we're not successful without partnership between suppliers, franchisees, and the company. And well, and obviously, and all of that is in service of the customer. So everything we do is, how can we better serve all of those constituents? How do we deliver better experiences, more relevant experiences and food, of course, to consumers? How do we create a better experience for our crew that work in our restaurants every day? How do we partner with suppliers in a, you know, equitable way? So I think Ray Kroc, you know, original founder, owner, that he instilled all of that from the very beginning. I don't know if you've seen the movie The Founder, but you know, you show him peddling this like six things shake mixer, you know, and then he meets the McDonald's and he sees like, oh, they're onto something here. So like, he was a visionary and he was always like focused on the customer and the rest will work out. He was the one that was always talking about innovation. So I think he instilled it from the very beginning, and this has just propagated ever since.
That makes perfect sense. I guess obviously, you know, businesses the size of yours have some advantages as it comes to, I guess, scalability or, you know, the sheer size and power of what you can do. How does that relate to, you know, your ability in the world of data analytics to try and stay ahead of the competition or the kind of, you know, chasing pack, I guess?
And that is, you know, at the heart of our vision is that it that should be an incomparable advantage. Our size is so much bigger than every other close-in competitor that our size alone should be an incomparable advantage in terms of scale, cost of, you know, cost of doing business, et cetera, et cetera. I'd say our scale and size is can be a double-edged sword, right? Because we're so big, sometimes it's harder to move the ship. But once we've set our mind to something, that's, you know, that what is great is we put the full force of the company behind it and we make it happen. And that's one of the things I love about McDonald's is once we set intentionality to something, we, at least in my short tenure here, we tend to be successful.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah, that's super fascinating. I guess in terms of the setup, you talked there about, you know, being an enabler to the wider business, and obviously you've got a largely decentralized team. How, I guess I'm just more curious than anything else, how does that work in terms of, you know, what part sits within the central function versus what is then out into the business in quotation marks?
Yeah. Well, that's the part that we're just now figuring out. So that's what I meant of like, we're building the plane while we fly it is until my role was created before we had data and insights sitting literally in every function.
Right.
Work and then separately a technology team, and they weren't necessarily connected or talking. Everybody was building data platforms, products, and services in isolation. Mm-hmm. And so the job to be done is to figure out what is the right operating model. Remember, I talked about those 1,000 resources, internal and contractors. So over the course of the next year, that's what we're building out is what is the operating model? What is the org design? So none of that has been resolved yet. So we're literally in flight as we speak right now. I have been connecting with a lot of people who have been on your podcasts and other chief data officers who have paved the way before me so that we're, you know, learning from what's worked and not worked from those that are already organized in similar fashion. So trying to learn from the industry as well.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I know when we originally spoke, Michelle, and I think I asked you a very pointed question, which was something along the lines of, you know, what do you think has allowed you to have a very successful career thus far? And I think you kind of reeled off 4 or 5 things. You know, I think you said relentless curiosity, leading with a business hat first and a data analytics hat second, simplifying the complex and being able to tell good stories, change management, and then development, both personally and for your teams, which I found fascinating that you could reel those off, because I think that's sort of often a question that people kind of go, oh, I'm going, well, I don't know, I need to think about that for a second. But
it's kind of like, find it fascinating that you can reel it off.
Well, I guess it's, yeah, I don't know, I just found it intriguing given what we do kind of day to day, right? But just talk us through why you think those things are important and they've, you know, helped you to be successful, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I probably could rattle off because I think about it a lot, or this question also maybe comes up a lot. But like for me personally in my career, I'm somebody who, when there is a new opportunity, something that hasn't been built before, like somebody needs to go figure it out, I'm always raising my hand because I have a natural proclivity towards like white space opportunity, ambiguity, like create something from nothing. So that has certainly helped me in my career because I keep finding myself in spots. It's like 30 years ago, there was this commercial, I think for Chex or something. It's like, give it to Mikey, he'll eat anything. It's like, give it to Michelle, she'll figure out anything. So I tend to be like the figure it out girl. But on top of that, just generally in my career, the desire to always understand what's going on in the industry. I attend a lot of conferences. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I think that does make a difference. I think as we become more senior in our career, we tend to become more, which is true. I think everyone, you become naturally more introverted and more like closed in. And that's not ideal for how quickly the world is changing right now. So for me, and the thing I always tell people whenever anyone asks me, like if a young person was starting out, what would you tell them? I would say, I wish I had talked to more people in the industry and went to more conferences more junior in my career. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting in itself, right? Because we do a load in the event space and create a load of events and, you know, have this whole community, which is about bringing people together. And I think your synopsis there is absolutely spot on in the sense that as people get more senior, they operate more in isolation, right? You know, the amount of people that have said to me on this podcast, being a chief data analytics officer is probably one of the loneliest jobs in the world, right? You know, but I guess it's only as you get more senior that you probably get a little bit more confident in just going out and speaking to people and asking for help and advice. I guess, you know, when you're more junior, it can often be almost frowned upon that, well, you know, you shouldn't need to be asking for, you know, and all of that type of nonsense, really, which I find interesting. The bit around business hat first, data analytics hat second, I'd love for you to talk me through that, because I think, again, if I had a pound or a dollar for every time somebody had said that to me, you know, business leader first, data leader second, I probably wouldn't need to be doing this podcast, to be honest with you. So, but yeah, always keen to understand how people have gotten to that conclusion, really.
Yeah, well, then it's probably all been said before, but I think it's, you know, self-evident that we, all of us businesses, exist to deliver a product or service to some constituent, whether that's B2B or B2C. And data and analytics is not the end, it's the means to an end, right? And so you have to understand what's the end. What's the value you're trying to create, to understand how data and analytics, or now AI, can be useful. So going back to that, like, what can we do versus what should we do? I feel like I'm often having this conversation, especially with like sometimes technology people who are less close to the business. So if you don't understand the business context and the value and why we're doing what we're doing, it's easy to imagine all the things you can do. But what matters to the business is what we should do, which should be grounded in the value we're trying to create. And when you're clear on that, then it makes it real easy on what to go do next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess I spoke to somebody today, actually, who was talking about, you know, that they worked for an organization where that was made abundantly clear. You know, these are the strategic goals. This is the direction we're heading in. But I've also had people come on this podcast and very openly say, actually, that's been a challenge throughout my career of trying to understand what the business is trying to do so that we can tie data analytics back to that kind of strategic direction and get the balance right. What would you say from that perspective?
Well, normally when people say that, it's because they're not in the right forums or to get the right perspective, right? That's like why more senior people tend to have more perspective, because they're in more meetings where these conversations are happening. So in our case, I think, you know, we're very lucky because we do have a seat at the table where the business conversations and priority decisions are happening. And that's really key and critical. So if someone is a senior leader in data and analytics and they're not sitting at the business table, then that's a problem and that should be rectified.
Mm, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure we could talk for hours on that subject around, you know, the importance of having a seat at the table, in quotation marks, and the pros and the cons and all of that type of good stuff. Obviously, in the sector that you work in, right? And I think, has it recently been relabeled? Is it, you know, fast food is now frowned upon, it's quick service. Is that right?
Yeah. For a while it's been called, yeah, quick service.
Right.
Or okay. I mean, sometimes we get lumped into fast casual as well, but yeah.
Okay, fine. And I guess, because obviously I think the thing that naturally, when people think of McDonald's, they think of other similar types of restaurants, right, who you would consider competitors. But actually, I presume that your competition, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I guess is anybody that serves food or drink to a certain extent. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because you kind of actually have to take it by context. So because we serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner, who we would say our breakfast competitors are would look different than lunch and dinner, right? Like we consider for dinner time Domino's Pizza a competitor where we wouldn't necessarily for lunch or breakfast, or the same with Starbucks for breakfast. But that's like the close in, right? But what you're talking about, which I fully agree, is actually the larger context is like share of stomach, and anywhere that could be a convenience store, a grocery store, the decision to cook dinner at home really truly is our competition.
Yeah, it's about, I guess, getting your customers to buy McDonald's for their meal as opposed to any other potential thing that they could buy or make themselves or whatever the case may be,
or snack.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that the, because obviously, like, coffee's a massive market, right? You know, I had someone on the on our podcast from Costa Coffee, which obviously is not as big in the States, but obviously a major player here in the the UK, who kind of said, you know, well, naturally you'd think that Starbucks is our biggest competitor, but actually, you know, there's other, you know, like McDonald's are a competitor to them, because people are, you know, maybe no longer necessarily going to a specific coffee shop to get their coffee, because, you know, there's more McDonald's stores out there that people walk past and go in, or whatever the case may be, or, you know, can get them on Uber Eats now as well, right? So but yeah, no, it's an interesting landscape, because I think it's probably a business that is more complex than people realize. You know, you think, oh, it's, yeah, McDonald's, burgers and fries, but actually there's quite a lot to it, I think.
But you're right. I mean, it is exactly what the customs person said. For example, in Australia, we sell more coffee at McDonald's than any other competitor, inclusive of Starbucks or any of the local people. In the UK, it's pretty high too, but we're definitely not number one. But for exactly what you said, right, physical proximity matters. And because we have so many stores, and we're at an affordable price, right? You go to Starbucks and you can pay £5 for a drink. You go to McDonald's, you pay £1.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Conscious of time, I've got a few things that I want to get through, but especially around, you know, we live in a world where advancement and change is, the pace of it is so quick. I guess, how do you wrestle with, you know, such a fast-changing landscape and market as it comes, you know, as it relates to data analytics specifically within your industry sector?
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess a couple of ways. Like I said, you know, staying connected, going to conferences, talking to leaders in non-competitive tiers. We get obviously a lot of input from major consultancies, right? We work with every major consultancy. They're all giving us advice all the time. Because we are blessed with a lot of resources, we can, you know, carve off resources to go and explore new things like generative AI. So are we the fastest? No, but I don't think our intention is ever be first to market. Our intention is to be fast followers. And when we do it right, you know, do it once, do it well, do it right. So I think we have the ability to move quickly once we make a decision to do something, but we're generally never the first to do something. Like if you look in the, you know, news, Taco Bell and Chick-fil-A and a lot of other major retailers are further ahead than us when it comes to things like technology and AI. But once we do it, we're going to do it big and do it everywhere.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, as you probably alluded to earlier on, there's been many organizations that were probably first or definitely market leading that now no longer exist, or, you know, certainly are, don't have the reputation that they once did. So I think that's probably testament to say that you don't have to be first, you just have to be best once you get there, right? Which I find, yeah, really, really interesting. You mentioned generative AI. It'd be remiss of me, Michelle, not to talk to you about it, given, you know, practically every podcast episode I do nowadays has to kind of touch upon it some, you know, in some way, shape or form. But I guess, how do you see that playing a role in your data analytics and AI journey at McDonald's? And then I guess maybe the industry more broadly.
I mean, I think it's going to continue to evolve. It already has, right? Just in the last few months, it can evolve so much. But I think practically, you know, every company is trying to figure out how to use it. But practically, I think it's going to be in horizons. Like horizon one is there's just obvious productivity gains, low hanging fruit, things like GitHub and tools that help us just to be more efficient to take out redundant work. And then horizon two, I think is going to be like innovation ideas that are not touching customer, not high risk, like knowledge management, creating tools to help bring like multiple manuals together to make it easier for crew members to figure out, you know, what's the operating procedure of building a Big Mac? Just making that up. And then like the third horizon is going to be like truly innovative ways that show up in the world to change how we work and how we innovate. But I always say this all the time when we bring this up, but remember like when the internet came out 27 years ago, we were having all these same conversations, good and bad, right? Like internet's going to spread disinformation and rot teenagers' brains. And there was all this negative things, but then there was also the positive things of what the internet was going to do. And now it's just a part of our lives. We never talk about it. No one's having conversations about the future of the internet, right? And I feel like that's going to be true of generative AI. It's going to be lots of conversation, lots of figuring things out, lots of bumpy roller coaster roads, but eventually it's going to smooth out and it's just going to be in the background of our lives.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Do you envisage that, because I think your kind of synopsis there of the three horizons is kind of very, very accurate. So I kind of co-authored an article on this where we did quite a bit of research and looked at how organizations were using it or were planning to use it. And as you say, there was kind of the three layers we called it, right? So first one being productivity gains, as you mentioned, second one being, you know, more a functional level in terms of how do we improve functional units of business. And then the third one being obviously like the big major bang, right, where it changes how businesses operate in and their entire model. And that's the kind of consensus that we landed on too.
Great. Glad we agree.
and just for the record, me and Michelle did not co-author that.
I know. I haven't read that article yet, but I will.
I'll send it over to you. But I guess in reality, how long do you think it might take? You know, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, but you know, I guess there's quite a way to go, right, until mm-hmm. organizations are fundamentally ripping up their playbook and starting again because of this, you know, new incredible potential in the technology that we have. But I guess, yeah, just keen to get your thoughts on how quickly or slowly you think that might appear.
Well, you know, there's that famous quote, which I'm going to butcher, but it's something like, we always overestimate the short term but underestimate the long term. Have you heard that quote?
Yes.
Yeah. I had it handy, but I don't know what the answer is, but I can guess that, right? Like, people's assumptions about how disruptive it's going to be in the short term is not true. But how disruptive it could be in the longer term, probably people are underestimating, because you can't even imagine what you can't imagine.
Yeah.
So I think in the next 2 years, probably it's not going to be as disruptive or impactful as we think it will be. But in 10 years, we should have this conversation again and see where we are.
Yeah, 100%. Where do you see the industry heading more broadly? Think about the next, I don't know, 3, 5, 10 years, not just necessarily around generative AI, but I guess data and analytics more broadly.
I always hate love these questions, because, you know, it's so hard to put a stake in the ground for where the future is going to go. But we talk a lot internally about, like, how do we become a data and AI first driven company? And what I mean by that is that whole idea of, like, it being, you know, decentralized and a part of, to it being sort of at the center, the coal that fuels the fire of everything that we do. Jokingly, we had this investor day last year, and I can say this because you can go and find the transcript. Our leaders got up and spoke to investors about our next 3-year strategy. And I think we counted, it was something like 42 times that data and analytics was mentioned across the 6 leaders. And I say that to say, we talk about it a lot because everyone knows and understands that with generative AI and 5G and all of these technology enablers, it's allowing us to have more data and unique ways and do things with it we've not been able to do before. So where that's going to take us, I don't know, but I do think that it's going to become more and more central to how we do business in the future.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. No, makes perfect sense. Well, Michelle, look, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for giving up your time. I know you're incredibly busy and, you know, working across multiple different time zones. So we appreciate you coming on, and yeah, look forward to seeing how the rest of your journey at McDonald's unfolds.
Thanks. Thanks for doing what you do to champion data and analytics.
No, it's not me that's doing it. I'm just the facilitator. So I kind of don't like it when I get people kind of giving me plaudits for that. But I guess if we're just trying to bring people together to share the knowledge and the wisdom.
Love it.
That's it for this episode of Driven by Data, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week speaking with another thought leader from the world of data and analytics. Until then, please follow Orbition Group on social media if you've not already done so, where you'll be able to subscribe and therefore be made aware of the podcasts as they arrive. And please share, like, and leave reviews so that more people from our industry get to hear and benefit from these too. If you've got any questions or you want to suggest ideas for topics or potential guests, then please feel free to reach out to me. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week. We'll